A little bit of self-disclosure here. You can find out a little bit more about me. I am a Neil Diamond fan. And I've liked him for a long time. Even from high school, I liked Neil Diamond. And I say that because, you know, maybe some of you have this image of your pastor as this testosterone, macho, guy of guys kind of thing. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to change your perception of me that I'm a guy that likes Neil Diamond. I do. And if you have a problem with that, I might, you know, pick a fight with you, but I'm too sensitive about that. I probably wouldn't. But no, I like Neil Diamond. And he's got a song, and when his signature song, probably, anybody else a Neil Diamond fan, just so I know who's on my team? Nobody is a Neil. Okay, I've got a couple, thanks. But his signature song is a song called I Am, I Said, and it comes from about 1971. It's an old song, and the chorus I have up here, it's listed in. And he wrote this at a time in his life where he was struggling, and he was an up-and-coming artist, but for whatever reason, he was trying to find himself and where he was at and what he was to do, and he was having some mental issues he talks about, and it took him quite a long time to write this song, but this is kind of his signature song, and he usually ends his concert with this song called I Am, I Said, and some words are in here. It says, I am, I said to, that's misspelled, should say no one, to no one there, and no one heard at all. I am, I said, and nobody heard me. I am, and nobody heard me. I am, I cried. I am, said I, and I am lost and can't even say why, and it leaves me lonely still. It's kind of a dark song, really. It's kind of a neat tune, and it plays well. If you haven't heard it, we're gonna play as we walk out of here. I've got that as one of our last slides, so you can hear it. Hopefully you'll recognize it. But it's kind of dark here. You know, I'm struggling here, and I'm having this, I'm crying. I am, this artist is saying, I am, and nobody's listening. Here I am, and nobody cares. And I'm lonely, and I'm crying this statement, I am. And it's this proclamation that he's saying that I exist, and I matter, and I have something to say. I have significance, and to some level, some greatness, but no one's hearing this statement that I have about I am. I am. Jesus makes some statements similar to Neil Diamond. I don't think he got his words from Neil Diamond. It was probably more likely the other way around. But Jesus says several times similar statements to that song. I am, I said. I am. And one of the times he says it that is so pronounced is at the time of his arrest. And it's probably one of my favorite stories in the Bible that I really want to see this story replayed, because it's just one of those things that's just cool. I want to see this happen. And so I was hoping I could find a really good video that demonstrates this. And I found one, but it's okay. But I want to play this. This is the story that comes from John chapter 18. I want you to watch this here when Jesus was arrested.
Because many times Jesus had met there with his disciples. So Judas went to the garden, taking with him a group of Roman soldiers and some temple guards sent by the chief priests and the Pharisees. They were armed and carried lanterns and torches. Jesus knew everything that was going to happen to him. So he stepped forward and asked them,
Who is it you are looking for?
Jesus of Nazareth.
Judas the traitor was standing there with them when Jesus said to them,
I am he.
They moved back and fell to the ground. Again, Jesus asked them,
Who is it you're looking for?
Jesus of Nazareth.
I have already told you that I am he. If then you are looking for me,
let these others go.
He said this so that what he had said might come true. Father, I have not lost even one of those you gave me.
That was the best video I could show. But Raleigh, put the text where that comes from. It's the next slide there from John. And there's a couple of things I want to point out from the text here that we could possibly miss. But this is when he's going to be arrested. He's in the Garden of Gethsemane with his disciples. I said, "Who is it that you're looking for?" And they say, "Jesus of Nazareth." And in bold there, I have the words "I am," and in italics the word "he." The "he" has actually been added. When they put the Bible together, they thought that brought some clarity to the Bible by saying, rather than just "I am," but I'm going to say "I am he." It probably made a little more sense in the modern languages to add the word "he." But originally, it's those Neil Diamond words. It's "I am." "I am. Who is it you are looking for?" And they say, "Jesus of Nazareth." And he says, "I am." And the cool thing about this that wasn't shown really, really well in that is what happens? What was the reaction of the soldiers there? And you look at the end of this, what's on the screen here on verse 6, they drew back and fell to the ground. John's the only one that reports this during this arrest, that when Jesus makes this proclamation, "I am," those guys are just blasted back and they're put to the ground because of that response. "I am." Powerful words. And a lot of times you'll find it, if you look at your Bible, a lot of the times you see these passages that say "I am," you'll see the word "he" in italics, and it reads better. We get it a little bit more. "I am he, I'm the one." But that was added. It makes more sense for we English-speaking people. "I am he." But originally it was just those two words, "I am." And those two words pop up very frequently in the Gospels, especially in John. John uses those words quite a bit, and that's where we're going to camp for here for a while, about those two words, "I am." There are some other passages that are included, that include those two words, that are key stories. The next one here is the story about the woman at the well. I don't want to go through all of this, but there's this story where this Samaritan, this outcast woman, is found with Jesus. Jesus, a Jew, and a Samaritan woman at a well by themselves, which is odd. It probably would be maybe like a Protestant religious leader and a Catholic woman would be maybe a modern day equivalent. And it's just, you know, religiously, socially, it's a little awkward. And they have this conversation that is going on here. And the woman's going back. She's on her fifth husband, and there's this, not an argument, but there's this conversation going back and forth. And so she says this, "I know that Messiah is coming." And the Samaritans had a different theological viewpoint of this. "I'm waiting on Messiah." Well, Jews are waiting on Messiah as well. And she says, "When he comes, he will proclaim all things to us." Jesus said to her, and there it is again. He is italicized. "But I'm waiting on Messiah," says this woman. And Jesus comes back with two words, "I am. I am." He says it again. One of the more profound times he says this is he's in an argument with the religious leaders. It comes from, again, John chapter 8 and verse 56. The religious guys, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the scribes, whoever was in this crowd here at the time, they're pushing him. They're pushing Jesus to find out where he's at and what he's doing. And he makes this statement. Jesus says in verse 56, "Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad." Then said the Jews unto him, the religious leaders that were there, "Thou art not yet 50 years old, and hast thou seen Abraham?" Jesus said unto them, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am." There's those words, "I am." And look at the response. "Then they," those religious leaders, "took stones up and were going to cast them at him. But Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by." Before Abraham was, I am. Now, never going to claim that my English is very goodly. You know, I'm a math major. But I can see that there's a grammar problem there. You know, you read a sentence that starts off, "Before Abraham was," you know, he doesn't say "I was." "Before Abraham was, I was." He says, "Before Abraham was, I am." You know, grammatically, that doesn't make sense. And I don't think it's supposed to, because he's doing something different. He's making a proclamation with those two little words, I am. And it must have been a pretty strong proclamation, because it just ticked them off. These religious leaders, what did they do in 59? He says this before Abraham was, I am. What's their response? Ooh, that's cool. Hey, let's go talk about this some more. Let's have a theological debate about your statement you just made. No. They go out to the driveway and pick up some rocks, and they're going to stone him. That statement has ticked these guys off to the core, and they want him killed. Why? Why would that statement make them so angry? Why would they want to stone him for a statement like that? You know, he just makes a proclamation. Before Abraham was, I am. Kill the guy. Why is that? Well, I think our answer is we got to go way back to why that statement is so powerful and why it had such deep meaning for the people that were asking Jesus these questions. So if we go back to, the book of Exodus, and the context here is God's people, Israel, has been enslaved in Egypt for a long time. They've been down in Egypt for 400 years. And God has heard the cries of these people that, you know, we're supposed to be your chosen people. What's the deal? And God hears this cry, and it's time for the exit, the exodus. We're going to pull these people out of Egypt and get them into this promised land that we promised back in Genesis 12 and Genesis 17. It's time for this to happen, and so God chooses the leader, Moses, to do this. I want you to go down to Egypt. I want you to go to Pharaoh and say, you know, it's time. It's time that we're going to pull these people out. Well, Moses is, you know, the typical guy that when he's called, he's a yeah, but guy. You know, I'm like that. I think you are too. You're asked to do something. Yeah, but, you know, I can't do that. Nobody's going to listen to him. Yeah, but I got a stuttering problem. Yeah, but he was there. He was questioning God, and you know, you're going to call me to go down to Pharaoh and get these bunch of people out and pull them out of Egypt and bring them back up to Israel. You really want me to do that? And he's questioning this. And so in Exodus chapter 3, God says to Moses, because Moses has asked God, you know, okay, suppose I do this. Suppose I agree to this thing you have me to do here. They're going to ask me, who sent me? What should I tell them? Who sent me here to do this delivering, to tell Pharaoh and to tell the people? Who sent me? And God, in verse 14, said to Moses, I am who I am. He said further, thus you shall say to the Israelites, I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, thus you shall say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my title for all generations. Ah, there we go. Who is it, God, says Moses, that I should tell the people that has sent me to you? God's answer, I am. There it is. There's this root cause of why Jesus was stirring things up in his proclamation to his religious leaders of the day. Jesus, in those statements, is now identifying exactly who he is. He is God. He is the great I am. That's what is in those statements when he says, I am, or as we translate it, I am he. That name, I am, contains power. In that proclamation was that which, or really who, it was that caused those soldiers to be blasted back and knocked on their tails. And it caused tremendous anger among the religious leaders of the day. And it was about doing something that was claiming something that was just impossible. This self-identification is therefore, in the religious eyes, blasphemy. You just called yourself God when you said before Abraham was, I am. You just said you're God. That's why they wanted to stone him. We live on this side of it, and we know that that proclamation is true. That's why we're here. We are Christians, and we believe that that great I am was made person in Jesus Christ. I am knocked those soldiers off their feet. I am ticked off the religious leaders of Jesus' day. I am caused that outcast woman at the wall to go spread the good news and bring several more people to that great I am. He says that several times in the book of John as in this form of proclaiming who he is. There are several other, they call them I am statements in the book of John. And this is where we're going to be. We're going to start talking a little bit about these statements that Jesus makes, these claims that he makes to who he is here. And we have them up on the screen here. And Jesus says, I am. And he says it in several ways. I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the gate and the good shepherd of the sheep. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way and the truth and the life. I am the vine and you are the branches. Those are these statements that Jesus says that are called the I am statements in the book. And these statements are less about proclaiming who Jesus is, that he is the I am, that he is God, that he is the Messiah. And it's more about revealing things about himself. And this is what we're going to talk about here for several weeks. We're going to hopefully open up these I am statements. What does it mean when Jesus said, I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. To me, it seems, though, as John is presenting Jesus with these I am statements in such a way to invite us to respond. Those first stories about when he says, I am he, I think that is proclaiming who he is. Then these other ones are inviting us to come to know him. And this is how we can come to know him. I am the one you've been waiting for. I am the one you need most. And you're never going to be fully able to understand me, but I'm kind of like shepherds and gates, and I'm kind of like a vine, and I'm kind of like light, and I'm kind of like bread. And I'm kind of like these candle things here that scared me. Where are we at? But he proclaims who he is in those I am statements. I am God. And for you to understand me, for you to come to know me, I'm going to put it in terms of things you can understand. I'm going to use these metaphors of things that are common to you. Things like sheep. You know, so many people knew sheep and they knew pens and they knew gates. They got it. But he's going to use those metaphors to introduce himself and his nature and his character in an invitation kind of way. Say, what are you going to do about it? If I'm this good shepherd, what does it mean for you? If I claim to be the resurrection and the life, what does that mean for you? I'm inviting you to respond to that, it seems to be saying. He uses these familiar metaphors in ways that people could begin to relate with something that is just no way can we fully understand. God is so big. He's so powerful. The more we look at our cosmos, the more we see how big the universe is, the more we understand genetics and the little things of... He's just huge and powerful, and how can we understand that? Well, we can because he came as a person, and he gives us these metaphors of things like shepherd and sheep for us to understand and then respond. And I think this is our business. This is what we are to do, to come to know him. And we come to know him by what's revealed here. Let's let this expose itself and then responds. We are to be in this close relationship with him, with the great I am. That is the business of what it is we do here. It's what we say we're about. We've been talking about the goal of the church, to make disciples, to make learners, followers, ones who are coming to know this great I am. Knowing about him, and also knowing him on a level that begins to change your life because of him. Knowing how he wants you to serve him by loving others and sharing your story of the great I am in your life. And right there it is. See, we come to know and we grow and we go and we show the great I am. That's what it is this is about. It is to me as if John here is saying, excuse me, the I am's, this is who I am, and this is what I'm like, and this is what I'm about, and this is why I've come. And in that is an invitation for us to come to know. We can come to know who he is and what he's about in a way that transcends the kind of knowing that's just informational, but it's rather the kind of knowing that is utmost relational it's life, transformational, and it's personally truthful. Knowing Him intimately is the relationship you and I were created for. All of our other relationships then flourish in our knowing Jesus. Knowing Him is life transformational as it brings clarity to the purpose of why you and I are here. And finally, knowing Him provides perfect peace that you and I are personally linked with truth. And a couple of points as we move into this, as we begin to, you know, allow this to be revealed here about who this I am is. I think it's important that we understand Jesus as not the I was. And I think we can do that sometimes. I think we can easily think about Jesus, the historic person that lived 2,000 years ago, and that was this guy that I was. But that I am is for us today. That I am is present tense. He's here. He is in our midst, and we thank you for that right now, because you are. The I am is here with us right now, and He's in our lives. And we want to make sure that we just don't get locked up in cool stuff that He did 2,000 years ago. That puts distance of both time and space between us and Him. He is here and now in our lives, that great I am. The second thing here, and you know, I'll admit this is I'm struggling making this point. I've worked on this point for quite a while because something's been on my heart here a lot, and I can't get the words right out. So I think I'm just going to say it several times in the next seven weeks. Maybe it'll just work its way out here. But we need to align ourselves with Him and not the other way around. There's a subtlety here about really experiencing the I am. Is God merely something we fit into our lives, this great I am? We sometimes can look to God to merely complete something we feel we have accomplished on our own. He's not the great I am then. If I think about my life, that I have all of these things going on, but I've got this emptiness here, and now I want God to come in and give me some meaning, you know, put the salt on my meat, or, you know, bring the dessert to the table here. We're looking to God sometimes. We're looking to this great I am as secondary. I just want stuff. I want free stuff from Him. And I think if that's the case, we'll end up singing a song more like what Neil Diamond's song was there, that puts me really in the I am. I am. Now, God, what can you do for me? And it's subtle there, but I think it creeps into our lives. I have so much that's in my life. Where does the God piece fit in here? And I think that can express a fundamental flaw in our being. We too often want to be that great I am. We have our lives and our families and our careers and our portfolios and our wealth. Where does God fit into all of that stuff? Is religion relevant to my life? One of the things that I hear a lot of modern churches trying to do is we need to make our service, we need to make our church relevant to people. You hear that word a lot. We need to do things that are relevant for the seeker people, the people that are in the 20 to 30 age people. We need to make this relevant. I get it. I understand. I appreciate what people are trying to do, that they're trying to give something that people would be attracted to. But I think that's backwards. I think it's fundamentally backwards, because what that is saying is, you know, I'm the I am. You got anything for me? Can you be relevant to me? It's backwards a little bit to try to make this relevant. This is truth. And when this gets exposed, the right way is to say our lives need to be relevant to this. It's subtle, but it's very powerful, and I think we're missing something there. I think a lot of our modern churches are doing that. We're trying to make this fit 2019, 2018. You know, instead of saying, this is truth, how do I center my life around it? How do I make my life relevant to truth? There's a song that Stephen Curtis Chapman did a few years ago. I hated it when it first came out because this is stupid. And it's just kind of a crazy song. And the chorus is up here, and it goes something like this. God is God and I am not. I can only see a part of the picture He's painting. God is God and I am man, so I'll never understand at all, for only God is God. And, you know, that's kind of a kind of a crazy song to sing there, but in it, I think the more I look at that and the more I hear those lyrics, I deeply appreciate that because I need to be reminded of that, because too often I want Joel to be I am. I want to be the I am, and I want to proclaim it. Now, God, what do you have? How can you fit on top of my plans instead of the other way around? You are God. I'm just a man. How is it that I can fit? How is it that I can submit to the plans that you've laid out before me? That's a battle that I think is going to be going on for us all our lives. We have this desire that we want to be the great I am, but we simply are not. And so as we go through that, I ask us to stay mindful of that, that we are looking at this great I am, and what is he calling me to do? How am I supposed to change my life? How is it that my life can become relevant to this truth? And if we find out that he is a shepherd or a gate, it's time for us to be sheepy. If he is the vine, then it's time for me to be branchy. If he is light, then I should be found in that light. If he is the way, the truth, and the life, then live accordingly. If he is the bread of life, then nourish yourself in it. If he's the resurrection and the life, live like it. He is the great I am. How is it that we respond to that? I look forward to exploring these I am statements here in our worship service and how they may help us respond to this invitation that John seems to be asking to allow God to be God in our lives. Let's pray.